Listen, the voice of an American president.
We stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of the 1960s, the frontier of unknown opportunities and perils, the frontier of unfilled hopes and unfilled threats.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy, accepting the Democratic Party's presidential nomination 4 years ago, and whose memory and tragic death on the streets of Dallas cast somber shadows this week over the presidential election campaign, a campaign which continued even as a presidential commission reported on its investigation of the Kennedy assassination. The news department of the ABC Radio Network presents Campaign Digest, a radio portfolio of the candidates and the issues of this 1964 presidential campaign. The who, what, where, when, and why of American politics today. With this third edition of ABC's weekly wrap-up of the presidential campaign, here is ABC newsman Don Gardner.
The clamor and hurrahs of the presidential campaign this week were hushed into stillness by the ghostly echoes of the murder of John F. Kennedy in Dallas 10 months ago. The publication of the Warren Commission's findings after a 9-month investigation brought sharply back to the mind of the nation how quickly and tragically the nation's political profile has changed. And the haunting memory of that day found its way into a campaign speech by the man who succeeded John F. Kennedy, President Lyndon B. Johnson.
10 months ago, after that terrible tragedy that thrust upon me without a moment's notice the responsibility of the presidency, I tried to pick up where President Kennedy had left off.
Mr. Johnson was speaking at Hartford, Connecticut, one of the many stops on a vigorous campaign swing through New England on Monday. Mr. Johnson was met everywhere by large, enthusiastic crowds, one of the biggest in Hartford.
Are we going to be united in November?
President Johnson's swing through New England ranged from Providence, Rhode Island, to down east Maine, to Portland, where the president said,
"There are voices which seek to tell us that government is an enemy of the people. But what is government? Government is the people."
President Johnson charged that the GOP has been captured by a faction that would torpedo American progress and prosperity. And then the president made a pledge.
If the good Lord lets me live and lets me continue to serve you, I'm going to be president of all the people instead of any single group.
It was early in the morning of Tuesday before President Johnson was back at the White House, his hand torn and raw from thousands of handshakes and his voice grown hoarse from dozens of speeches. For GOP presidential candidate Senator Barry Goldwater, the revival of an old American political ritual, the whistle stop, a railroad tour of hamlets, villages, towns, and cities, a device going back 100 years, but putting the candidate on the hustings face to face with the people. Before leaving from Washington, Senator Goldwater was asked why the train instead of a fast-moving jet plane.
Well, that old jet was getting quite a lot of use, but it's out with Bill Miller now. And this is just an idea we want to try to get on the train and visit the towns of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois.
And with that, Senator Goldwater's train moved off into the night, heading west. But the senator did not leave without a verbal shot at President Johnson's own campaign travels.
I read today where he was off on another non-political trip. I'll tell him one thing. He may have a lot of dams to dedicate, but we have more questions to ask, and he has dams.
And the Goldwater campaign train rolled into Ohio, making its first stop at Marietta. And this was the scene.
I'll tell you something. You haven't. I can't tell you what an honor it is to have the opportunity at my first whistle stop, as they call it, to speak in this famous place, the oldest city in the Northwest Territory, the start of Ohio.
Senator Goldwater did use his jet plane during the week in a cross-country tour in which he alternately blasted the Johnson administration and pleaded for Republican unity. About President Johnson, Senator Goldwater said,
"Our president has forgotten freedom, the great importance to freedom, in his great desire to have more and more and more power. He's so powerful today that the Democrats don't know whether to vote him or plug him in."
In Wichita, Kansas, Senator Goldwater outlined why he wants to be president.
"The main purpose that I seek the office of presidency and the promise I make you that when I become president, I'll carry this out, I want to see a diminution of the powers held in the executive branch."
And in Detroit, Senator Goldwater defended his proposal for a 25% cut in income taxes over 5 years.
"This is not some political gimmick. This is no hastily conceived proposal. It's a product and the result of careful study and careful deliberation."
Now, both presidential candidates concentrated this week on states east of the Rockies, each starting with speeches in Texas, then moving east and northeast. President Johnson in Texarkana, Arkansas.
"We ask for equality and justice and fair treatment for all of our citizens under our Constitution." "And because of this, some of us are smeared and some of us are told that we should be fearful. But the truth says that it is right."
Later in Oklahoma City, President Johnson said,
"I intend, as long as I am president, to make sure that the American government is a model of prudence and economy."
Earlier, after a joint appearance in El Paso, Texas, with Mexico's President Lopez Mateos honoring the settlement of an old border dispute, President Johnson offered a pledge.
"I pledge you here today, I will go to any remote corner of the world to meet anyone, anytime, to promote freedom and to promote peace."
And still on the subject of world peace, the president talked about the varieties of American strength.
"America's strength has never been the strength of arms alone. America's missiles are mighty. But the true strength of America lies in the moral might of our cause. It lives in the righteousness of the hearts of the people."
While President Johnson and Senator Goldwater barnstormed, there was a storm of controversy around United States policies in the use of nuclear weapons. Republicans said that President Johnson has already delegated authority to military commanders for use of nuclear weapons, and GOP National Chairman Dean Burch had this to say about that.
"The issue, or the big lie, is, does Senator Goldwater's position, that is, delegation of authority to the NATO commander for the use of tactical nuclear weapons, represent the existing situation, the status quo, or is it a radical departure from the norm as suggested by the Johnson administration spokesman?"
Echoing Chairman Burch was GOP Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen.
"We, the members of the joint Senate-House Republican leadership, therefore call on President Johnson immediately to make clear to the American people the truth in this matter, whether or not the U.S. Supreme Commander in Europe has been given the authority to use tactical nuclear weapons in time of dire emergency."
And replying to GOP criticism was Democratic vice presidential nominee Hubert Humphrey.
How that weapon is deployed, or how and when it is used, is a matter of the highest importance to the security of this nation.
Domestic issues have been taking up a large part of the candidate's speeches in this campaign. And Senator Barry Goldwater has been talking often about lawlessness, about the lack of law and order in the streets. In Boston, Senator Goldwater promised an attack on that lawlessness.
This I can pledge to you that Bill Miller and I will launch that attack. We'll first of all use our power and influence to see that law enforcement officers of the state and local level, the county, the highway patrol, get back the power they need to carry out their job.
An answer to Senator Goldwater came from President Johnson in Hartford, Connecticut.
We don't have a national police force. We don't have a Gestapo that we can send into your town overnight. We have a wonderful Bureau of Investigation that is available to your governor and to your mayor and to your local people. And we are going to work with them to make our streets and our cities safer.
Now, it has been charged by Democrats that the Republicans, in their discussion of lawlessness in the streets, are appealing to the so-called white backlash against the civil rights movement. And ABC asked the Democratic National Chairman about that charge, and John Bailey replied,
I think they are. I think that this is one of their hopes. I think that they feel that in view of some of the polls and some of the things that happened in those primaries, they feel that they can pick up votes by sort of encouraging this issue in a sort of a backhanded way. And I don't think they're going to be successful.
Replying to Chairman Bailey, Republican Chairman Dean Birch.
Now, Senator Goldwater has mentioned disorder in the streets. Now, disorder in the streets does not apply strictly to civil rights or to any other phase of our society. Disorder includes rioting youths. It includes any sort of civil disorder. And I reject out of hand any interpretation that Mr. Bailey would like to put on our campaign in this regard.
Now, all of this charge and countercharge, has raised the question of whether it's possible for Americans to carry on a political campaign without name-calling and mudslinging. There were sharp words on that subject from Senator Carl Mundt, a Republican, who chastised all the candidates, starting with President Johnson.
I thought that I should call attention to the fact that he and Barry Goldwater, Bill Miller and Hubert Humphrey have all been engaging terribly extreme personal denunciations and criticisms, and that a campaign in which you boot around such words as demagogue, a warmonger, ignoramus, trigger-happy, dope, those things do nothing but soil and destroy the image of America overseas, and that there can be no presidential winner.
Now, Senator Mundt's criticism is one always made of our campaigns, as observers wonder how Americans can survive the political slings and arrows they unleash at each other. One remembers, for instance, how Hubert Humphrey took pot shots at John F. Kennedy when they were competing in the West Virginia primary in 1960, when Senator Humphrey said,
you see, I sort of feel like an independent merchant competing against a chain store when I compete with the Kennedy family.
Yet after 1960's primaries, Senator Humphrey worked hard to elect John F. Kennedy. More recently, Pennsylvania Governor William Scranton, in June of this year, referred to Senator Goldwater when he said,
our past mission of serving America with a strong foreign policy has recklessly been turned into a philosophy of shoot from the hip rather than think from the head.
Less than 1 month later, that same William Scranton went before the GOP convention to proclaim,
beginning right from this moment, all of us Republicans must get on with the business of victory. That is our job. Mr. Chairman, if it is within the rules, may I say to you that I have the privilege to move that we make the nomination of Senator Goldwater unanimous for the United States.
And this past week, Governor Scranton was campaigning for Senator Goldwater, all in the tradition of American politics, where honest differences are cast aside in the interests of the party. Now, in addition to Governor Scranton, another Pennsylvania Republican was plugging for Senator Goldwater, former President Eisenhower.
Because of my abiding faith in our great party and my conviction that the political leadership it provides is badly needed today across the nation, I earnestly support it and its nominees for public service, headed by Senator Goldwater, our candidate for the presidency.
Now, Senator Goldwater, while picking up that strong Eisenhower endorsement, remained without the firm backing of Michigan Governor George Romney, but that didn't stop Senator Goldwater from telling a Niles, Michigan audience,
I want to urge you to re-elect Governor George Romney on November the 3rd. He's a governor that's done an outstanding job for you, and I think he deserves re-election.
Governor Romney still did not endorse Senator Goldwater, although he did introduce him to a Detroit audience.
In recent years, no man has rendered greater national service and personal effort to our party than Barry Goldwater.
Governor Romney remained evasive despite the Goldwater endorsement of him, and Senator Goldwater headed east in the pursuit of the elusive GOP necessity, party unity, in New York.
I urge the Republican Party in the state of New York to quit this childish horseplay of being divided. I urge you to get together. I urge you to get together and support the candidates who have been nominated by the Republican Party.
And what about New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller and the national GOP ticket? On Saturday, while viewing a New York City parade, Governor Rockefeller told ABC,
I have stated from the beginning that I would and the New York State Republican Organization would support Senator Goldwater as the candidate of the Republican Party. Our organization voted unanimously to do so. I've had basic differences with him, but he is the selection of our party.
On his New York visit, Senator Goldwater heartily endorsed Senator Kenneth Keating, who is being challenged by Robert Kennedy, the former Attorney General. Now, Senator Keating has not endorsed Senator Goldwater. In fact, is running independently. Nonetheless, Senator Goldwater said,
and it's a pleasure for me to be in the state that's been so ably represented in the United States Senate for years by Ken Keating. Ken, you know, is running against Lyndon's reject.
And for Senator Goldwater, a comment from Senator Keating in 3 seconds and 6 words.
I am not supporting Senator Goldwater.
Senator Goldwater's visit to New York has underlined the importance of the Empire State to GOP fortunes this year. Some state Republicans, such as Senator Keating, have divorced themselves from the national ticket, and there have been reports that New York Republicans fear the Goldwater-Miller ticket will pull other Republicans down to defeat. Now, the key race in New York is for the United States Senate seat, now held by Kenneth Keating. It's been a campaign where Senator Keating calls Robert Kennedy a carpetbagger, and where Mr. Kennedy speaks of important national and world problems, claiming that he has experience with them. A large factor in the election will be the votes of New York's many minority groups, who must choose between the liberal Keating and the liberal Kennedy. There has been one fiery exchange, possibly directed to those minority groups, in which Senator Keating charged that Attorney General Kennedy permitted the sale of government-confiscated German property to a group which Keating said was a front for Nazis. Senator Keating put it this way.
I would have said, I have alleged that you, Interhandel, are a Nazi front, and you must come into court and prove you're not in order to get this money. I think if they proved their case in court, of course they'd be entitled to it. But I wouldn't have handed it to them without their proving their case in court.
Robert Kennedy replied to Senator Keating and coupled his answer with a charge of dirty politics.
He approved of the arrangement. At the time that it was announced, he was kept advised of all the details, and then to wait some months and then make a charge in the middle of a political campaign that I was making this kind of arrangement with Nazis, as I say, I think is a new low in political campaigning.
As the stars of this 1964 political show, the presidential candidates, went up and down the land, there were other events vying for attention along the campaign midway. Newspapers and magazines put on a sideshow with their endorsements of candidates, endorsements such as the one from Atlantic Monthly coming out for President Johnson, the first time in 26 years that the Atlantic has endorsed a political candidate. In Boston, the Boston Herald backed President Johnson while endorsing several Republican candidates. The Herald normally supports Republicans. Pollsters still show that President Johnson is in the lead, but point out that 5 weeks remain before Election Day. One survey of states shows Senator Goldwater running even with President Johnson in the South, but running behind in key pivotal states. Ohio and Illinois are toss-ups, which provides a clue as to why Senator Goldwater went whistle-stopping through those states. And the campaign has not been without some humor. Senator Goldwater using the Bobby Baker investigation for a laugh line in Concord, New Hampshire.
In the stores now in Washington, they have a new measure. They call it the Baker's Dozen. You get 13, but you kick back 2.
But political humor was not Senator Goldwater's alone. Hubert Humphrey tickled the funny bones of his audience with a comment on a campaign soft drink called Goldwater.
State officials have outlawed the sale of Goldwater. I want to be perfectly, perfectly clear about this. I didn't say he was for sale. That's just what it said here. It said state officials have outlawed the sale of Goldwater, a new soft drink promoted by the backers of Senator Barry Goldwater. The pop is, quote, grossly misbranded. And because it lists as ingredients only artificial coloring and a preservative.
So it went this week with 34 days until Election Day. If the gloves were not off before this week, they came off as President Johnson and Senator Goldwater took the spotlight. The president described his campaign as a contest between the center and the fringe. The president's plea is to liberals, moderates, and conservatives by picturing Senator Goldwater as the extremist candidate. The Republicans saw a belated effort by Senator Goldwater to patch up differences within his party to stem the tide of GOP defections, if indeed there is a tide. And what about issues? Well, the president talks of peace and prosperity. Senator Goldwater warns of moral decay evidenced in government corruption and rioting in the streets. As the campaign rolls on, ABC's news team will be there bringing you radio's best campaign coverage. This is Don Gardner, back next week with another look at the week in politics on ABC's Campaign Digest.
As an election year public service, the news department of the ABC Radio Network has presented the third in a weekly series of programs highlighting the 1964 national election campaign. Campaign Digest is written and produced by Paul Jeffers, directed by Joe Dennehy, executive producer Tom O'Brien, audio engineering by Jack Wilkie and Ed Salzman, your reporter, Don Gardner.